I can be a winning Ryder Cup captain away, so is an exceptionally big deal, and it adds a lot to my legacy.
For the best Ryder Cup build-up reaction and exclusive interviews, go to otbsports.com/golfweekly and become an official friend of the pod now.
Hello there, you're welcome along to Monday evening's Off the Ball. So Ireland's World Cup qualification hopes back on surer footing after a win yesterday against Italy. Fiona Coughlan is with us around 7:30. Captain Padraig Harrington and Team Europe have jetted towards Wisconsin this afternoon. We have got a 35-minute Golf Weekly interview with Padraig Harrington. We're going to play you that after 8 o'clock. And then football show, Thomas Tuchel's stock continues to rise. Pep and Man City faltering. David Moyes' Mark Noble gamble backfired spectacularly. Pat Nevin is with us after 9. David Kelly of the Irish Independent with us, as well as Vera Powell and the Republic of Ireland are back in action. 7-game losing streak starting to look lengthy enough at this stage. 53106 text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Very happy to say Mr. Johnny Ward's in studio. How you doing?
How are you getting on, Joe?
I'm very well. Richie McCormick with us as well. Hey, Rich.
Young Joe, how are you?
Very well. So, a lot going on. Johnny Ward was cycling like nobody's business over the weekend. Go on, give us your stats. Give it to us.
Just went down to Greig na Mana, which is a lovely, lovely part of the country, with the Clane Wheelers. But we took in Mount Leinster on the way. And Mount Leinster was absolutely spectacular. And I think everyone who set off with the Clane Wheelers group completed it, despite the fact it's I think it's a climb that features in the Ross from time to time. And then when you get to Mount Leinster, it's an amazing view, and you can see into I suppose 2 or 3 counties. But RTE has a mast that you can go up to. The road has been kind of cordoned off, I think, maybe because of vandalism. I was reading on this today. But it's a 2.5 kilometer road up to the mast that essentially is an average of 14%. So it's the toughest climb in Ireland, and so we'd all agreed essentially that we weren't going to do it. But I don't know, it was the staggering beauty as we came to the original peak in Mount Leinster that got us in good form, and everyone, there were 5 of us there, and we all said we'd try it, and no one got off the bike. Everyone got up. It's 20 minutes basically on the bike of as going as slow as you can, 8 kilometres an hour, give or take. So you're barely walking, but it's so tough. Like it's so tough. So I like, for somebody who wasn't cycling only until last year and had never heard of the Clane Wheelers, I was really, really proud that 5 lads of various ages and various climbing capabilities, really various bikes, various weights, could get up a hill like that and not get off the bike, because it's mental torture as well as physical.
And this isn't a charity thing as such you're doing. This is now just your lifestyle. You're just now a lycra wearing warrior, is that right?
Middle-aged man in lycra mammal, yeah.
I can't believe it's happened to you, Johnny.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people will reflect on the pandemic and just say, well, I just started doing different things, because like to start the pandemic, I'd no work, no exercise. So the AstroTurf, which I would play, was obviously cancelled. The gyms were closed. So my neighbours Ronan and Lorna just said, do you fancy coming for a cycle with us? And it's just the social aspect to it as well. Like you meet so many people, and I thought when I joined a cycling club, they'd be really boring and all they do is talk about cycling. That latter part is true, but they actually like the crack as well. So like we all went out Saturday night and cycled back yesterday. And it's funny because we were 20K into the cycle on Saturday. And I just said to the lads, like, this is nothing anymore. Like 20K just doesn't even register. Whereas like up until last April, I live in Fatima. I'd never cycled to Tala, like, which would be 7 or 8K. It would never come into my head to cycle that far. So just to get this different mindset.
Nice. Good.
But yeah, so David Gillick, like I was on here with him before. We're going to go out for a spin this week. Kieran Lennon of The Independent, we were talking pre-show about the podcast that he's brought out this week and the whole Michelle Smith thing. I've been cycling with him last week, and you get to know people, and you know, Wicklow is stunning, like a lot of South Dublin is stunning, and there's no better way to traverse it than the bike, I think.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, the Michelle Smith stuff is fascinating. We did the paper review yesterday. Paul Kimmage was in the Irish, or Sunday Independent, excuse me, part 2 of, I presume 3 parts. Maybe there's more. I'm quite happy for them to keep on coming. But he was just going over, the period he was going over in part 2 yesterday was that period, say, post 92, before 96, where Michelle Smith's improvement is spectacular and she's knocking like 9 seconds off previous best.
press and everybody's agog, and it's just fascinating. And you know, there's anecdotes from Gary O'Toole in 93, I think it was, there was a championship on in Palma. Michelle Smith was on the flight and they got to the pool, and you know, they just went straight to the pool to have a look at the facility, and you know, she takes off her top and gets a bit, about to get into the pool, and Gary O'Toole's line in the piece yesterday was holy shit, you know, just transformation. And
it's fantastic journalism. It's just so enjoyable to read, and like, yeah. I don't really have that much interest in swimming or whatever, but obviously everyone was invested in that at the time. And Paul Kimmage is just, this is the stuff that he nails.
Well, it's also just so extraordinary that we are a country of this size, and technically, if you go by medals, our greatest Olympian has this shadow hanging over her career on the back of the fact that obviously she was banned for 4 years for tampering with a urine sample. So every 4 years, and it happened this year when the Olympics are on and we have the medals table, it's there. And maybe we haven't talked about it that much. Obviously it's difficult legally and every other which way to talk about, but I think a lot of people are really enjoying the walk down memory lane. So
yeah. And you know, I was kind of, I suppose, minded how well Mona McSharry has done as well, and swimming is so tough. But I suppose what was interesting for me was that basically your swimmers slow down very young.
Like Janet Evans at 24 was over there.
Yeah, which is hard to believe. And without without over pushing the whole cycling thing, that's the great thing. Like, that's with cycling, you can.
Oh my God, is this what does everything come back to cycling
everything.
In your life now?
It's yeah. like
it's like golf,
like Walter in the Big Lebowski. Everything's about Vietnam.
I just didn't think Michelle Smith was going back to your cycling, but here we are.
Let's just talk about cycling, actually. But like Larkin Wire, who would be clerk of the course and ex jockey, like he's Larkin's late 50s and he's amazing on the bike. But I was surprised that like the problem people had with Michelle's improvement was that she was 26, was she?
Yeah.
And to me, like, obviously that I don't know anything about cycling or about swimming, but yeah, so it's a brilliant read. I mean, if you haven't picked up the paper, I think this is why the Independent, you know, having a subscription service now makes a lot of sense, because people will subscribe for stuff like this. And it's fantastic journalism. It's what a Sunday newspaper should be all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, I mean, look, absolutely read the piece as well. We had Cliona Foley and Kieran Cunningham on the paper review yesterday, about worked around that time, so they had brilliant memories and anecdotes. So the paper review is worth a listen as well. I think we hadn't planned it, but we ended up doing the first 40-odd minutes on just the Michelle Smith piece alone. So that's waiting for you in all the usual places. We should start the news round, Richie. It is with thanks to Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. This Dundalk situation, Rich, seems very serious.
Yeah, the nightmare season just continues, Joe. They're going to be without as many as 11 players for tomorrow night's FAI Cup quarterfinal replay with Finn Harps. Four players have tested positive for COVID-19, with a fifth already ruled out of Friday's original game for virus-related reasons. Dundalk are also in the midst of an injury crisis. They surrendered a 3-1 lead to the 10 men of Harps on Friday night. Meanwhile, the FAI have confirmed that this year's final will be played on Sunday, November 28th at the Aviva Stadium, with a 4 p.m. kickoff, and the draw for the semi-finals is going to take place this coming Friday night.
You gotta have some dreams there, Richie.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be nice. It's like, it's a weird one, because obviously we had the whole Aviva excursion for the European Games, so it's taken the, I'm not gonna say taken the shine off, but you know, it's taken the carrot of wanting to get back to the Aviva, having never played there until this season. But yeah, like they're in with a chance of winning some silver, and that's what this side needs, is to actually measure their growth over the past few years with some tangible silverware. And they're not alone in that aspect. In the teams that are in the last four, you can say St. Pat's are the same, but there's definitely been a journey that Bowes have been on, and an arc that they've been on over the course of the last few years that kind of needs a cup to attach to it.
It's definitely interesting, because obviously the Dundalk season is just so completely insane, and then Shane Keegan spoke well about it Saturday, but like, they should no way be in this position. They should have beaten Finn Harps, but if Finn Harps were to beat Dundalk, I kind of like that, just for the cup. So you'd have Finn Harps, Waterford, Bowes and St. Pat's, who haven't really been relevant in the cup in recent years, so we'd have a bit of a novel final anyway. But the Dundalk stuff is just, it's almost like, what's next? What can go ridiculously wrong? And I mean, the COVID situation there, I don't know who the players are. I don't think that's been revealed, but it's disastrous stuff really. And like, the irony is, Joe, that like, by far, I understand it to be by far the biggest budget in the league, and they're in danger of getting relegated.
Yeah. What's going on for you at Dundalk, Richie?
It's a mess. Like, it's they bought so poorly. Like, there's that line from The Simpsons where Lyle Lanley comes to town and the town's after coming into money, and he says, you know, a town with money is a lot like a mule with a spinning wheel. God knows how they got it, and danged if they know how to use it. Like, the players they brought in this in the close season, like, because you have to concentrate on the pitch stuff first. Like, just don't, you'd wonder what their thinking was in bringing half of them there. I'm not saying they're bad players per se, but you need to have a degree of knowledge of the league to thrive in it, I guess. And there have been teams that have been better at buying and thriving because of that. Pats are one, Sligo for sure are another. And Dundalk just went for this weird quasi-Galactico thing where they thought bringing in a load of international players from around the globe would be you know, beneficial to them, and it completely hasn't been. They let go of some really, you know, staunch players who've been there a while, knew how to get it done. Sean Horne and Young Gannon on the right-hand side. Like, I don't get it. I don't get what their MO is. I don't get what the club's direction is at peak six. I think it's fair to say haven't been great at explaining that to their fans. There's just so many questions that you'd love to sit down the owners of Dundalk and say, like, what, going back to the hiring, with the greatest respect, of Papa Filippo, like, what was happening?
That was bonkers.
Like, it was just, like, look at it in retrospect, it was mad. Even Shane's situation, like, Shane tried to point out to them, I think he mentioned on the show before, that, listen, lads, I'm not a team manager. I'm, you know, I'm good at what I do, but I'm not a team manager. And that's the position he was put in at the start of the season. And now they find themselves here with Vinnie Perth back. And I just would love to sit down the Peak Six, the Heiser family, and just go, hold Heiser family and go, what's going on, lads? Like, what's the plan here? Like, I know we got an update on the ground and that they finally will be at least exploring working on Oriel Park. But beyond that, to have squandered the position that they were in 18 months ago to be here is just, it's barmy.
Yeah, okay. Where are we going next?
Daily Mount Bohemians looking to breathe new life into their European
it's all cycling and bows tonight. It's
absolutely. Yeah. I'm just surprised you didn't mention your free cycling gear, Johnny, when you were talking about Irish cycling, but that's another story.
That's quite controversial, actually.
Yeah. Keith Longside, welcome Derry City to Daily Mount Park. Tonight, kickoff there is at 7:45, Joe.
That free cycling gear is taxable, I would think. So,
put one for both tonight, yeah.
Harrington and Team Europe, yeah, absolutely. So 7:45 kickoff, we'll keep you updated. Harrington and team have headed for Wisconsin, Rich.
They have, yeah. Padraig Harrington saying it's important his European team don't peak emotionally before Friday's start of the Ryder Cup. Members of Team Europe flew out of Heathrow this morning, bound for Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. They have since arrived in the last hour or so, and Harrington says he'll earn his money between now and Friday's first tee shot in the foursomes.
If anything, we're calming them down at the start of the week, you know. But we have all that in hand. We have motivational videos. We have funny videos. We have a whole team going through the week, and then obviously there's different people would speak, and there's it's all in hand. That's crucial, obviously, the week at the I suppose the atmosphere amongst the team. And as I said, it is very much, there's a really nice atmosphere. Everybody's looking forward to it. There's a level of excitement, and you know, you hold on to that because it's a long week. You don't want to wear anybody out, you know. So yeah, you try and keep that at a certain level at the start of the week, and obviously build up come you know, Thursday evening, and let them off on Friday. Nothing more we could do for them at that stage.
Who wins?
The same team who win every year on paper. Team USA. Certainly when it's in USA. I mean,
What difference does that make? Is it familiarity with the courses, or is it partisan crowd, or
both? And they'll set up the course to suit the strengths, the traditional strengths of a team. So, for instance, in Paris, which was the last one on European soil, obviously, they had high rough and narrow fairways, and the Americans hate that. And also the green speeds, slower in Europe, faster in America, all that stuff comes into it. But
is there harmony in the US team then?
Well, that's the question. And that's why so often David beats Goliath in this tournament. Like, this US team on paper are maybe the best US team ever. Wow. They're right up there. Their average, the average world ranking is 12th for Team USA. For Europe, it's 30th. That's a big gap. Is there harmony? There's never harmony with the US team, which is what makes the Ryder Cup so interesting. Okay, I mean, there's the golf, but it's the intrigue and the infighting and the egos and all of that stuff leaks out. Because they've no affinity towards like the dressing room pretty quickly, because the dressing room dissolves. So straight away when it's over, you get the, this is what the captain did wrong.
Yeah.
And even in 2014, famously, Phil Mickelson sitting five seats down from Tom Watson, because they all line up for the press conference, knifed him with Watson sitting there in front of everybody. So the US are like box office with this stuff.
As somebody wrote in the paper today, it shouldn't work, but it does.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's not like the Europeans don't have their fair degree of personality clashes or issues. Paul McGinley was in the Mail yesterday doing an interview, and it was really interesting that when he was captain, Sergio and Harrington didn't get on for a long time.
Because they often dueled against each other and so on.
Sergio really felt Harrington had nicked two of his majors, and that was, you know, difficult for him, and wasn't the most magnanimous loser. But McGinley called Sergio, it seems, in ahead of 2014 and said, I'm thinking of obviously having Podrig as one of my vice captains. And it seems Sergio said to him, absolutely not.
Wow.
No way.
Yeah?
No way. A few more phone calls, Sergio acquiesces. McGinley says he arrives on the first day, walks into the team room. Who's playing table tennis? Harrington and Garcia.
And Sergio.
So they parked it. And I'm sure like a week after the Ryder Cup, it had dissolved again. But I'm not sure Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau are going to park.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's going to be just a lot of fun, and it'll be the most partisan, European-free crowd you can imagine.
Yeah, and the Americans are great patriots.
So that's on the way. Padraig Harrington with us after 8 o'clock. We spoke to him at length for Golf Weekly last week, so we decided to play some of that this evening. He's in really good form. Really nervous, actually, he was saying. He gets that this is going to go a long way towards deciding his legacy in some ways. A man who has a legacy, Richie.
Yeah, tributes continue to pour in today for Jimmy Greaves, who passed away yesterday at the age of 81. Described as one of the most natural finishers of his or any other generation, Greaves scored 447 goals in 668 club games. His 44 England goals make him the country's fourth highest goal scorer, with only Gary Lineker, Bobby Charlton and Wayne Rooney scoring more. In later life, of course, he co-helmed the iconic St. Greavesy television show and was a regular co-host on TVAM. John Giles is on this morning's OTVAM describing what it was like to play against Greaves.
No, I didn't really know him. I didn't really know him, Ger. I did an interview with him one time when I'd finished playing, and he had finished playing when I went to West Brom. But he was a funny lad on the pitch. I remember one time playing at the White Hart Lane, and the two of us went in to tackle, and the referee gave us a free kick against him. And he said, "Effing hell, ref," he says, "the first tackle I've won all season." And you give a free kick. He wasn't a tackler, you know. But I think he was quite funny with the lads. But he seemed to have a mentality, Ger, that if you win some, you lose some. You know, like a lot of strikers are like that. They don't get, the great strikers, if they miss a chance, they don't get upset about it. They don't get down on themselves. And that was his attitude, Jimmy. I've seen him miss a couple of chances, even playing against me. Miss a couple, wasn't many. You say, well, that's the game, you know. Some you win, some you lose. But the next chance you get, you put it in the back of the net.
Only Fools and Horses obviously came to mind over the weekend, because Boycey, the character who played Boycey, passed away. And then Jimmy Greaves, I remember the line where Del Boy goes, ICI dropped a point, and he's reading the Financial Times, and Rodney goes, Chelsea dropped three on Saturday. And then Del goes, well, they should never have sold Greavesy, should they? And it's sad when these characters pass on. And I'd say for John Giles, I listened to John's interview. It was fascinating talking about just watching Greavesy in front of goal, how he'd make the goal look massive.
Yes.
But I'd say it's difficult for John when these players, like, you know, when you, and it's like us all, when you get old and your colleagues pass away. It's
honestly, the last 18 months, I feel like not a month has gone by without John having to pay tribute. A lot of his Thursdays have been, well, two more of your teammates have died. Mm-hmm. Leeds in particular, that Leeds team seems to have just fallen by the wayside, unfortunately, at the moment. So,
and I know he was like, John was petrified of getting COVID, and he came on the record of saying that, and you almost forget now that this pandemic is still there or whatever. But it's it's sad. Like it's tough. As much as he wasn't friends with him, Jim, you know, a true legend of the game, and to describe him as the best striker he probably played against was some accolade,
isn't it? And that line about making the goal look very big, it's just something strikers, great strikers do when you think about it. And the average strikers, it looks bloody hard to score sometimes.
It's the hardest thing to do in football and strikers.
Timo Werner makes the goalkeeper look enormous, doesn't he? And yet when you see Ruud van Nistelrooy in one-on-one, goal just looks enormous. He's got 5-6 different options. The one thing it really highlights is when they're on Match of the Day and it's, you know, top scorers and they always have Shearer there and it's, oh, you're number one, and it's Can Kane catch Shearer, and they do the all-time list. And it actually is a disgrace that TV is still continuing with this nonsense of differentiating pre-1992 and post. When you think about it, I got at the start, Sky in particular wanted to drive this Premier League. I think the Premier League is now established. I think it's going to be okay. I don't think it needs to, it's handheld anymore. It's going to be just fine. I really do think on television, you know, you look at Greece's record, 447 goals. Why, when they're like putting Harry Kane into context on TV, is Greaves stricken from the record?
It's a nonsense.
No sense. It's such a nonsense.
It's like year zero in Cambodia and nothing happened before that. Well, actually, no, it did. And it was the same first division as this, just had a different name.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's actually embarrassing, Richie, when you're now watching TV and they omit someone like Greaves. I wonder if his death, actually, and a moment of reflection and an acknowledgement of how many goals he scored might prompt TV to go, do you know what? Premier League's going to be just fine. We don't need to pretend history didn't happen. And actually, let's just open up the record books.
Yeah, you know, so, and it's not like 1992 or 93 is comparable to the present day either. I mean, like,
exactly,
time moves on, the game moves on, everything progresses and evolves, but the very fact that his numbers will not change, like, he was one of the most natural goal scorers, I think, ever. Like, I was looking through compilations of his stuff online yesterday and today, and you won't see him score the same goal twice, and with every different type of goal, he'll look equally as comfortable in front of goal or taking it. He was just a phenomenon. Well, and to go off and try and forge a career in Italy, like, granted, he says it didn't work out, whatever. But to, at that age and at that stage in his career, and that stage in the World Games evolution, to go off and play and try your hand at AC Milan was fantastic. Came back and just set the world on fire at Spurs. Yeah. Did, you know, pretty well at West Ham as well. Like, he talked about it in an interview, and there's some candid ones going around about how, you know, they wanted to basically bring in Martin Peters and they were going to use him as a make weight. And he said, just sell me. Just let me go. I'll just go. Right. You know, right. And went to West Ham and was, I think he was league top scorer his first season there. He just said, like, I'm going through a bad patch. Like John mentioned there, like, he'll get another one. He just knew he was going through a bad patch and it'll come good for him again. And it did.
Yeah.
And he continued being a really good striker for West Ham. But, like, yeah, just a totem of the game. And to see these characters like him and like Ian St. John and like Jack and half the other Leeds team members that have passed away, sadly, in the last 18 months, it's a difficult thing to go through to see these icons fade.
Your point about the relevance of say an Alan Shearer goal scored in 92 in comparison with today is a great one, because I guess the older we all get, to realise that 20, 30 years is just the blink of an eye. And so if we're cancelling out an Alan Shearer goal scored in 92, you go back 30 years from 92, it was 1962. Like, it's all so within touching distance. We're not talking ancient history here at all.
Maybe some of our younger listeners think it is ancient, but as you inferred, Joe, we're not quite in that bracket anymore.
So, Richie, Ireland and World Cup hopes on a surer footing, if still not guaranteed. They have Scotland, I think, next Saturday.
Yeah, they do, yeah. It's a little bit more within their hands anyway. They got their World Cup qualification bit back on track yesterday. Winners Bavin Parsons and Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe scored the tries as Ireland beat Italy 15-7 in Parma. Ireland play Scotland on Saturday, as you mentioned, and all four teams in the group now have one win apiece going into that final round of matches.
Yeah, so basically second place, if Ireland do finish second, is not the end of the world. They'll go into a repechage later on in the year with another chance to qualify. But if they want to qualify automatically and win this group, then this will come down to points difference. There was some confusion for a time, it seemed it was head to head, but it looks like it's points difference. So Italy at the better points difference, they're 10 points better off than Ireland. So say Ireland beats Scotland with a bonus point and Italy beats Spain with a bonus point, for instance, Ireland are going to have to win by 11 points more. So it's still a tall enough order, or else they're relying on Spain to do them a favour against Italy at the weekend. Fiona Coughlin's on this hour to chat us through that.
Yeah, I'm still actually, just to interrupt, yeah, I'm still surprised at the...
Is this about cycling?
No.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, actually, I'm still surprised at the sluggish nature of companies to sponsor, like, emerging female talent. So, like, Bevan Parsons, for example. Like, this, it's so marketable.
Yeah.
And, like, when you see Davy sponsoring Leona Maguire and so forth, and how good that is for Davy's image... Like, I don't know, I'm probably missing the point here, but I don't know why they aren't falling over themselves to market women like that who are emerging in emerging sports and are extremely talented.
Yeah. They're getting there.
Getting there slowly.
Slowly.
But yeah, because I just think, like, and I mean, some of the figures even for the amount of people watching women's sport and TV are staggering, absolutely staggering. And from a League of Ireland perspective, it's actually hard to compare, because it doesn't compare well. Mm. More people want to watch women's sport, and League of Ireland, we need to work on how we get more people to watch it, basically.
Yeah. So Tipperary of Football Manager.
Yeah, they're going to stick with David Power for the next 3 years. Last year, of course, saw Power lead the Premier County Footballers to a first Munster title in 85 years. Paddy Christie is going to continue as Tip under 20 boss, as well as serving as one of Power's selectors. And Munster are going to be without Roman Salanoa and Liam O'Connor for Saturday's opening game of the new United Rugby Championship. Salanoa has a knee problem that's being reviewed by the province's medical department, while O'Connor has an issue with his neck and arm that's being seen to by a specialist. Chris Farrell is also out with an abdominal injury. Munster open their campaign with the visit of the Sel Sea Sharks to Thomond Park. Try saying that three times fast. Dan Levy, Andrew Porter and Gary Ringrose are all in contention for Leinster's game with the Vodacombe Bulls. All three have returned to full training alongside Kieran Frawley and Nick McCarthy. However, Harry Byrne and Josh Murphy have been ruled out of that game at the Aviva.
Very good. Richie, thank you.
Nice, lads.
Cheers. Richie McCormick there with the news round. Johnny Ward, pleasure. Thanks, my man.
Bevan is actually the fresh food ambassador with Aldi Ireland.
There you go. There you go.
So there you go. There I just you go. Probably should have checked that before I went on raving.
Check. Come on, yeah. The radio.
Why would
say
you
your
check?
Piece and then check.
Much easier when you do no research.
We're talking to Fiona Coughlin next.